description at the speed of light with a question mark at the end. So what I'm going to talk about is it possible or not possible to do encryption at the speed of light? So in other words, can we use optics to do encryption? And so what I did in particular with this work was cryptanalyze an optical CDMA encryption scheme. I did this as part of my master's degree in optics. My co-authors are my master's degree advisor, Paul Prusnell, and Ron Menendez, who's an engineer at Telcordia. And so what I'm going to be doing is talking about a scheme that Ron Menendez came up with his group at Telcordia. So to start off, what is optical encryption? So first of all, optical signals are analog signals, and they're very high frequency signals. They operate at frequencies in the terahertz. So if we think about sending a pulse optically, we're just going to send a pulse of light. But what's actually going on inside the pulse of light is you have these very high frequency oscillations. And those oscillations will be at the terahertz. So it's not possible to actually measure all the high frequency parts of this optical signal. And the reason for that is because when we do measurement, when I say measurement, I mean we're going to do electronic measurements of the optical signal. And so it's actually not possible for us to trace out the entire trajectory of that oscillation because it's just too fast for electronics. So what they do in optics today is they use all kinds of signal processing techniques to put information into the optical signal and then get it back out again into form they can use. And so the key idea behind optical encryption is that we assume we have an adversary that cannot measure all the high frequency part of the optical signal, so he's only able to do the measurements that we know how to do today realistically. And we encrypt by hiding information somewhere inside the signal using the high frequency parts of it, such that the adversary won't be able to detect what the information is because he can't measure the entire part of the signal. So the sender and the receiver will be able to retrieve their information because they know where to look for it, but the adversary won't because he doesn't know where to look for it. And we do this using the special properties of optical signals. So we're not just talking about digital bits here, adding them, subtracting them, multiplying them. We're actually going to use the analog properties of the signal. So the particular thing that I'm going to talk about is optical code division multiple access. So that's optical CDMA. You might have heard the word CDMA before. It's the technology used in cell phones. So I'm going to explain how that works later on. So basically, there's a lot of interest right now in the optics community on this optical CDMA technology. And if you go to the conferences and you read the papers always start out with optical CDMA can bring security to your networks. And so there's not a lot of clear work on what that means, but there's a lot of interest right now in the optical community with this particular technology. And their hope, if you read it this way, is that they can bring confidentiality to the network, which would be encryption if we were to take it to its logical conclusion. So what I'm going to talk about today is a cryptanalysis of an optical encryption scheme, which was proposed by Ron Menendez, my co-author, and his co-authors at Telcordia. And I think when I got to start analyzing the system, I looked at a lot of systems, and many of them didn't work. So I'm going to walk you through all these other systems and why they're not very good systems. And finally, we'll get to Ron's system, and I'll show you why it could be a good system. And then I'll show you situations in where cryptanalysis of it shows that you can actually learn the key of the system using only two plaintexts. And these are known plaintexts, not chosen plaintexts. So to start off, why use optical encryption? Well, let's talk about stream ciphers. So an electronic stream cipher is you have a stream of plaintext bits, and they get XORed with a key stream of bits. So in an electronic stream cipher, the rate of the plaintext and the rate of the key stream must be equal. And the reason for this is because for every bit of plaintext you want to encrypt, you need one bit of key. So what's happening is that the speeds of the two things are equal. And you'll notice that here I have this blue optics right here in the middle. So when we talk about sort of high-speed networks, what you're going to have between the sender and the receiver is eventually going to be a fiber. So what the idea here is that, okay, we have a fiber between the sender and receiver anyway, so why not, instead of doing everything electronically and then translating to optics and sending it on the fiber, why not do the encryption in optics? So we do have the fiber in the middle, so situations in which this fiber is already there, maybe we can do something with optics. So the idea here is now we're going to stretch the domain of optics over to the encoder and the decoder. And so this is the holy grail. This is what everyone would like to be able to do. We would like to do encryption at rates that are faster than the data rate. So what does this mean? So imagine we had 160 gigabits of plaintext coming in serially into our encoder. Okay. So before, when we're doing this electronically, this would have had to be 160 gigabits of keystream, one bit for every bit of plaintext. But if you use the special properties of optics, the hope is that we can actually have fewer keystream bits than plaintext bits. So what we might have in this setup is 100 bits of keystream going in parallel to the encoder, and then 1600 bits of data going in. in serial of plain text, and then you'd switch the key. So you put another 100 bits in and have another 1600 bits of plain text go through, and that would that was how the system would process. So the way we can do this, the hope that you can use the optical signals, the special properties of these signals, to do more than you could with a plain old, you know, one-time pad or a stream cipher that you could do in electronics. So what we're trying to do, I mean, it's very possible to just make an encoder and a decoder out of optical, you know, optical parts and have it do 160 gigabits, 160 gigabits of key, just like you would do in electronics. But what we're trying to do is actually go beyond that and have the key stream go sort of slower than the plain text. Okay? So that's the hope. So when we talk about our adversary, we're going to talk about this realistic adversary that's only able to measure, she's not able to measure the entire part of the optical signal. She's only able to detect things that we can realistically detect today. So the attacks I'm going to show are going to be attacks where we can actually build them, and they've actually been done in practice. I haven't actually done them, but there are papers showing that you can use these techniques to learn the things that I'm going to use in the attacks. So encryption with optical CDMA, there's over 10 years of research in the optics community. So the first paper in 1994, they talked about truly asynchronous, highly secure LAN applications. And so basically, they were hoping to apply some CDMA to the plain text and not have to change the key at all, which doesn't really work. But anyway, I'll talk about that later on. But you can see people were thinking about this 10 years ago. There's this program by DARPA, which is the funding organization, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, and they're funding optical CDMA research. And this is a quote from their website. So they say that one of the hopes of the program would be enhanced multi-level security and low probability of intercept. So, and if you read a lot of the papers, they talk about confidentiality. So if you want to see sort of how much research has been going on in this area right now, this is the past 2 years. These are publications from different groups. So this is MIT, this is Telcordia, this is UC Davis, this is Purdue University, and this is Princeton. And this paper in particular got a lot of popular press. So the schemes that I'm going to analyze today were analyzed actually in these two papers. This one sort of proposed it, but didn't really explain why it would work. This one looked at it a little bit, and I'm going to take it a little bit further. But the real point here is that there's very little work by the security community on this research. So it's most of the work has been done by optics people, and so these are people that you would have to tell them about a known plain text attack and explain to them why that's an important attack to consider and things like that. So I do think that there's a lot of interesting things that could be done in this area. I don't think there's been enough involvement yet by people who really understand what it means to have a secure encryption scheme. So to start off, let's go to optics 101. This is a sine wave. A sine wave has an amplitude and a frequency, and it also has phase. So amplitude is the height of the sine wave. Frequency is how fast it oscillates. So something that would be oscillating like this much faster would have a higher frequency. And the phase of this sinusoid is sort of where it starts. So this one will have phase zero because it crosses the origin right there. So that's going to be phase zero. This is another sinusoid with the same frequency, the same phase, the same frequency, the same amplitude, but it's going to have a phase shift of pi. So that's what we mean when we have a phase shift. So I'm going to be talking about spectral phase encoded optical CDMA. So spectral means frequency and phase means phase. So the encoding will proceed in the frequency of the signal and in the phase of the signal. So that's why I put this up here. Okay. So here's an overview of the system. A system. This was one of the early proposals. This is kind of basically what the 1994 paper proposed. So what we have here is we have Alice and Bob. And they're on opposite sides of the network. And Alice wants to send bits to Bob. And Alice is going to have two code words, C0 and C1. So we're talking about optical code division multiple access. This is where the codes are coming in. Okay. So what Alice is going to do is to send a 0 bit, she's going to send C0. And to send a 1 bit, she's going to send C1. And we assume that Bob knows the C0 and C1 as well. So what are these codes? So right now, when we abstract them, we're going to talk about them as vectors. And so for us, they're going to be 0, 1 vectors. Okay, so what do these vectors represent? So in the real world, this is what's happening. What we're taking is we're taking a 1 in code 1, sorry, code 0, has a 1 over here. That means at frequency 1, we're going to send this sinusoid at frequency 1 with phase 0. Okay. This minus 1 at this frequency. So this is for frequency 3. Means we send a sinusoid at frequency 3 with phase pi. Okay, so you can see that this code word means we're going to send frequency 1 with phase 0, frequency 2 with phase 0, frequency 3 with phase pi, frequency 4 with phase pi. Okay, so that's what these code words mean. So what is Alice going to do? She's going to take her 0, and she's going to encode it this way. Basically, she's going to convert it to a series of sinusoids with different phase shifts. And then this group of sinusoids is going to go across the network, get to Bob, and Bob is going to decode it. And so there are kind of a lot of ways that Bob could have decoded in this particular system, but I'm going to show you one way, which is the way that we're going to use in our system. So this is how Bob decodes the signal. So this is a simplification, but what he's going to do is he's going to do the following thing. So first thing he's going to do, he's going to check for a 0 bit. So remember, he has this code word C0. So basically what he does is he's going to take the dot product of C0 with what he got on his input. Okay. So here we take the dot product 1 times 1 is 1, minus 1 times minus 1 is 1, minus 1 times minus 1 is 1. We have 4 ones, and so the total is 4. Okay, so he takes this dot product, and I'm not going to give you the details of how he does this, but this stuff has been built in practice. You actually can build decoders that do this. And he's going to do the exact same thing in parallel with C1. So he's going to again take the dot product with C1. And in this case, we have 1, minus 1, 1, minus 1, yes. So we get 0. Okay. So he's going to do these two things in parallel. And so outside, so basically he's going to have two devices that do this. And one of them is going to give him a pulse of height 4. And the other one's going to give him a pulse of height 0. So no pulse. And he's going to decide that a 0 was sent. Okay, so that's the decoding process for Bob. And okay, so let's keep this down here. And so now let's think about security for a minute. So here's Eve. No, here's our plaintext and here's our key. So what do we define as our key in our plaintext? That's the first thing we sort of need to think about. I think it's clear that the ciphertext would be right over here, because that's the only place we're going to let Eve sit. So the plaintext should be these bits that Alice is sending. And the key, I guess, will be the code word C0 and C1. Okay, so assume that this C0 and C1 is unknown to anyone except for Alice and Bob. Okay, so can Eve recover the signal? So I think a lot of people in this room know the answer to that question. This is going to be many time, one time pad. In other words, it's not secure. And the reason is that Alice can distinguish C0 and C1. Okay, because there's just a 0 keeps getting mapped to the same code word 0, and 1 keeps getting mapped to the same code word 1. So Eve should be able to tell them apart. And in particular, how can she tell them apart? What she needs to do is just build her own Bob detector. Okay, she doesn't know these code words C0 and C1, so she can just choose them at random. Choose two code words, take these dot products, the output of one of them will be something, and the other one will be something else when a 0 happens, and then something else will happen when a 1 happens. So she'll be able to distinguish between these two code words, using the same type of process that Bob used, even though she doesn't know the key. Okay, so it's not secure, and the reason for that is because C0 and C1 get always mapped to the same bits. So that's the first attempt, and this is kind of like the 1994 paper. But the optics community is aware that this is not a good way of doing things. These two papers both show that this system is not secure. So let's try something else. It's not going to work, but let's look at it just so we understand how the system works. So now, supposing instead of taking C0 and C1 and mapping them to 0 and 1 directly, we put this thing called a scrambler in front of these code words. So what does this scrambler do? Now what we're going to do is we're going to have the secret key that will set this scrambler. And the key is going to be, again, a vector. And it's just going to be a vector one bit for every wavelength that we use. So in this system, we're using 4 frequencies, 4 wavelengths. So we're going to have 4 bits for the key. And how is it going to work? So Alice has this code word, and this was the code word 4-0. So what she's going to do is she's going to take this code word, and it's going to go through the scrambler. So what this scrambler actually does is it does phase delays to each individual frequency. So this is a sinusoid sent with phase 0, and this is going to delay it by pi. Okay, so that's going to be, and in fact, when you do the abstraction, it's just a multiplication. So 1 times minus 1 is minus 1, 1 times 1 is 1, and so on. So you can see what the scrambler is doing is it's just doing an element-wise multiplication of these vectors. Okay, and the reason for that is because you're taking the sinusoids and you're adding delays to them. So this means delay it by pi, and this means don't do anything. Okay. So the scrambler now is this key, and it's going to have, there's going to be 2 to the number of frequencies possible keys that you can choose. But again, is the system secure? Okay, so, okay, before we go on, so how does Bob recover his bits? So Bob knows code 0 and code 1. So what's going to happen is the signal is going to come here, go through the scrambler, which does the exact same operation. So we're going to multiply this element-wise by this, and we will have recovered the original signal. Yeah?
So isn't this a one-time pad?
Yes. It's coming? Yeah, it's coming. It is a one-time pad. So the reason I'm showing this is not because it's secure, but because I want you to understand how scramblers work, what the scrambler does. Yeah. So yeah, I'll show you why this is.
Oh, I see. Is it undetected? Sorry.
Yeah. Sure. No. Okay. So for now, let's just look at how this scrambler works. So we're going to do these element-wise multiplications, and Bob is going to again run his recovery algorithm, which is that algorithm with the dot products that I showed you before. Okay. So you can see at the bottom of the slide says to secure this plaintext, refresh the key for every new bit of plaintext. So let's just for now suppose the key bits don't change. Okay. So here's Eve. And we can see, again, this is still the substitution cipher, the many-time, one-time pad, because the same bit 0 is going to get mapped to the same code word. This time it's not going to be the code word C0 or C1. It's going to be C0 times whatever this key is. And then the one bit will be mapped to C1 times whatever that key is. So it's going to be identical to the previous system. Eve, again, can build her own Bob detector with two random code words and see what she gets to distinguish between 0 and 1. But there is a way to secure this system, okay? So if you change the key for every bit of plaintext, in other words, you put a new vector here, for every bit of plaintext, you will have a secure system. What you'll have is a one-time pad, which is a secure system. So that means every bit of plaintext will get a new key. Okay, so every one bit of plaintext gets 4 bits of key. So not a very good system. But anyway, this is an example of something that you could have done, but you might not want to do. Any question on this?
The scrambling happens optically or is that electronics?
It's optically.
It's optically.
Yeah, okay. So when I show these, I guess these squares, you can imagine as this is the world of optics.
Okay.
So what parts of this are electronic? Or the bits coming in here is electronic. Basically,
yeah.
What it's doing, it's modulating a laser. So a laser's just pumping out pulses for you. And then this is a setting. What this thing is really doing, it's taking light, it's splitting into different wavelengths, and to every wavelength it's applying a phase shift. And we can't do this applying a phase shift to light electronically, we have to do it optically. Because you think about it, it's a very high frequency signal and you're changing its phase, so that has to be done optically. So this device is a completely optical device, and they can actually build these things. The guys at Telcordia have built this system. So. Yeah.
One comment from the description of the scrambler, it seems almost like you're stuck with this linear operator there.
Yeah.
And that's maybe the basis of your problem, that you cannot smuggle anything non-linear in there.
Okay, so, right, so in the next slide I'm going to talk about noise and what that does to the system. Right, so with this type of system, yeah, you have, with optics in general, the type of operations you can do are, there, I mean, they're different from what you could do in electronics, but they seem to be pretty linear. So you can do delays, you can take light and split it into wavelengths. You can, you can add things. You can't really subtract things so easily. You can filter things. Right. Okay. Anyways. So, here's our system that we just talked about. That we saw was either a substitution cipher that's not secure or a one-time pad that's not very good. Okay. So this is what they proposed doing. Instead of using a single Alice, we're going to take multiple Alices in parallel. Okay, so we're going to take multiple bits in parallel, and basically, if you can think about it, multiple bits, they're going to get coded, and then they're going to get superposed together. So each of these Alices is going to work just like the other one that I talked about before. And now, this combining operation, in practice, really all you can think about it is you can take a bunch of fibers and stick them all together onto the same fiber. That's all they're doing. All these signals are getting superposed together. Okay, so that's sort of physically what's happening, but if you think about what's actually happening, it's a little bit more interesting than that. And so I'll explain that to you later on. I'm not sure why. Okay. So here's what I want to say here. So basically, we're taking these many Alices. We combine them together. These signals that are all superposed one on top of each other, okay, are going to go through the scrambler, which is the same scrambler I talked about before. They're going to go over the network. They're going to get descrambled the same way that they would have been descrambled before. Then the signal will be split. So when we say splitting, it's really like the aggregation of all these things just gets copied over to all these different Bobs. Okay? And then these Bobs are going to recover the signal. So I'm going to go through exactly how this works. But before I do that, I just wanted to put this picture up one more time, which is what I had up before. So here we have 160 gigabits of plain text. Imagine that we could do this, and 1 gigabit of keystream. So when I'm drawing the system, how this sort of translates to this one is, if you imagine this key is 100 bits long, right? And then you have 1600 bits of plain text coming in, and then you're gonna change the key. Okay, so you'll change the key after 1600 bits of plain text go in. So this sort of has the potential, if it had some security, if it was able to keep the data secret for a duration of 160 bits, then you would have had this hope. You would have achieved your hope of having this really fast encryption. Okay, so that's the reason that this system is interesting. So when we analyze the system, what we're going to assume is that the key is not changing. Okay, and the reason for that is we're just going to sort of take one interval where we put in this 100-bit key and let everything go through, and then we're going to change the key afterwards. So for the purpose of my analysis, I'm going to assume that the key is fixed. Okay. So how does the system work? So there's three steps. Each Alice is going to map an electronic bit to one of her code words. And then after that, all the signals from all the Alices will be combined. Then after that, they'll all be scrambled, and then they'll go over the network, and everything will go in the opposite order. So just to go over this again, the mapping proceeds as before. The code words are going to be unique. So each Alice is going to have two code words different from all the code words given to the other Alices. Again, the code words mean the same thing. So a 1 will mean we send frequency 1 with phase 0, and a minus 1 will mean we send it with phase pi. And so all these signals will be sent out by each Alice. And now they're going to be combined. So let's see what happens when they get combined. So Alice is going to send out, each Alice is going to map a 0 to a code word. So notice that these code words are different. Okay, so Alices will have different code words for their zeros. Okay, so we have, basically if we have n Alices, we have to have at least 2n code words. Okay, so they're going to get combined together, and we're going to talk about this combining as this optical combining. Okay, for now, and I'll explain to you what this actually means later on. But this has to do with, because what's happening here, we're adding sinusoids with different phases. It's not like we can take the two vectors and necessarily add them together. Okay, and I'll show you why in a second. So let's just assume it's some optical combination operation here. It's going to go over the network, and Bob is going to... So basically, this signal here, which is the superposition of all the Alice's signals, is going to go here, and then each one of the Bobs will get a copy of that information, of that signal. Okay. And so what is Bob going to do? He's going to do the same thing as before. So he's going to take the dot product of the superposition with these things. So his decoding operation is exactly as it was before, which translates in abstraction to this dot product. So if you take a dot product of this vector with this one, these are identical, so we're going to get 4. And then this one is going to be 1, minus 1, minus 1, 1. So we add that together, that's going to be 0. Okay, so what he's again checking for this peak of equal to the height of the length of these vectors, so height 4. So he saw it, and that means that there was a 0. And then he does the same thing in parallel. He's going to do it for what he calls a 1 bit. Takes the dot product here. And so the dot product of this with all 1 vector is going to be 0. And this with the all 1 vector is going to be 0. And so he's going to see 0 plus 0, whatever this plus is, which I'll tell you in a minute. And he's going to see no pulse. Okay. So that's how he does his recovery of his bits. So even though there's this superposition of all this information, he's able to take this dot product and either look for a peak or look for no peak. And that way he can determine which is 0 or 1. Alright, so why does this work? Okay, so if you look at these code words, you might have noticed that these are orthogonal code words. So an orthogonal code word would be a code word where I take it and itself dot product, I'm going to get 4 in this case. I'm going to get equal to the length of the vectors. And if it and something else from the code is going to be 0. So these two vectors here are orthogonal, okay? Because when we take the dot product, they get 0. So this system has to use orthogonal codes, okay? So when you look at these systems, they're all built using orthogonal codes. So what does this mean to us? So an orthogonal code, how many code words do you have in a set of orthogonal codes? You have a linear number of codes, okay? So if you have an orthogonal code of length W, you're going to have only W code words in the code. So again, this system is vulnerable to attack because basically Eve can build her own pair of her own Bob decoder, choose two code words at random from the set of W codes, and basically the system can be brute forced. Okay, because there aren't a lot of codes to go around. Okay, so the optics community is well aware of the fact that the cardinality of this code is very small, and that's why they talk about scrambling. Okay. So this is sort of, and by the way, this system is optical CDMA. This is spectral phase encoded optical CDMA. That's what they're using, the non-secured version. Non-secured version is this is what it looks like. Okay, so back to optics 101. So here's our sinusoid, and it has a phase. And so this is going to be Alice-1 sinusoid, this blue one. And then there's this other Alice over here. Okay, so Alice-1 thinks she's sending a sinusoid with phase 0. And Alice-2 also thinks she's sending a sinusoid with phase 0. But because their phase references are not synchronized, they're actually sending sinusoids with different phases. Okay, so we had these multiple Alices in parallel. They're all using these different reference phases because we can't synchronize their phases. The reason for this is because, first of all, if you think about it, we have these extremely high-frequency sinusoids, and it's very hard to synchronize them. And the other thing is their references are noisy. Okay, so what they consider their reference point is actually going to change, and it changes as a result of temperature. It's going to change because of laser fluctuations. All kinds of environmental things are causing it to change. Also, the fact that the fibers are of different lengths can cause it to change. So basically, the reference of Alice-2 relative to the reference of Alice-1 is going to change. It's going to oscillate. Okay, so when I talk about this optical combining operation, it's really the superposition of all these sinusoids that have different reference phases. Okay, and so when we talk about phase noise, we talk about this reference phase jumping around as a result of temperature, length of fibers, and things like that. Okay, any questions on that? All right. So now let's add scrambling to the system. So before we had order W possible code words because we had to use orthogonal codes. Now what we're going to do is we're going to add scrambling. So basically we're going to put the scrambler right on the end of the output of the combiner. Again, it's going to have a key. Now this key can be chosen at random. Okay, so if the length of the vector is W, then we have 2 to the W possible keys. Okay, so now we went from a cardinality of a code that's equal to linear in W. Now we're going to 2 to the W. And that's why Ron and his group thought about putting a scrambler in front of this, right after this combiner. Okay, so how does the system work? Well, as before, we're going to have all their Alices map their bits to code words. So these two Alices are both sending 0, and they use their different code words for 0. They get combined using this plus operation, where the plus means they're superposed, but with different reference phases. And then they're going to go through the scrambler. So the scrambler works exactly as before. It basically operates on each sinusoid individually. Okay, so again, what we're going to do is we're going to take an element-wise multiplication between this vector and this vector. And so that's going to give us minus 1, 1, 1, 1. Minus 1, 1, 1, 1. So that's what we're going to get. And it's going to do the exact same operation here. So this one is going to be element-wise multiplied with this, and we'll get that vector. Okay, so this sort of distributive operation on the superposition of these sinusoids. So it's going to go over the network. It's going to go through the descrambler, which again does an element-wise operation on each of the vectors. And we're going to get this superposition back out. And then it's going to get copied to all the bobs, and they're going to go through their recovery algorithms individually. Okay, so that's basically how the system works. So all we did now is we added this scrambler, which is basically a phase delay, a set of phase delays, one for each frequency, on top of the output of the combiner. And then we're going to get 2 to the W more code words. So now let's think, is this just another one-time pad? Okay, so do we actually, in order to secure the system, should we change the key at every bit? Because if we did, then it would just be a one-time pad. It would be a very complicated and expensive one-time pad, so why don't we just use an XOR? So what I want to tell you is it's actually not a one-time pad. Okay, so the reason for that is because of this phase noise. Okay, so remember that this Eve has got this optical addition, the superposition of these two signals. But remember again that their reference phases are oscillating, okay, in a way that we can't control, and nobody even knows how they're oscillating. We just know that they are oscillating. So this is going to give us some extra entropy. Okay, the fact that there's phase noise is going to give us some new entropy that we can use in conjunction with the fact that Eve is unable to exactly measure the optical ciphertext. So when I say that, I mean that Eve can't measure, like Eve can't see this. Okay, she doesn't know what these vectors are. She's not able to read the individual phases of the individual sinusoids. All she can see is their superposition which is added together using this noise that comes because of the alices having different reference frequencies. Okay, is there any questions on that? Yes.
Do phase shifts matter in the recovery?
They do matter, but in practice what happens is that, remember I had a peak of height 4? So what they'll do is they'll make a peak of height, you know, 20, and then there'll be some little stuff on top, on the bottom. So you'll never see like a perfect peak with nothing, but you'll see a peak with some junk. Yeah, Evan?
So it's not, how do the bobs, how is Bob 1 sort of synchronized with Alice 1? So Bob 1 and Alice 1 are measuring the same phase reference, is that?
No, they don't need the same phase reference. It's the dot product operation doesn't need a phase reference. It's just, how do I explain this? Okay, they don't need to have the same phase reference. Basically, because the codes were orthogonal, okay, he's going to take the dot product of all these things together, right? And so one of them is going to give him a huge peak, okay? And one of them is going to give him, I mean, I said it was 0 before, right? But it's actually going to be sort of 4 plus, you know, small plus more small plus more small. So what you'll see is like this for a peak, for a 0, you know, if this was sent, and then if this wasn't sent, what he'll see is like this. So he'll be able to see that this is a very tall peak and this is just a bunch of noise. So he'll be able to distinguish between a 1 and a 0. So I oversimplify things, but basically it's like little things here that get added. Yeah, Christoph?
Yeah. I think we all have probably similar ideas. I'm a little worried about your statement there is extra entropy in because we don't know the phase references yet. At the same time,
yeah.
Bob doesn't care about this extra entropy, right?
Right.
He is capable of sorting that out again, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So now I think that probably most people in this room here feel
can't
Oscar do the same thing, right?
Okay, so at the end what you're going to see when I show you the attack is that there's sort of... there's some unknown things in the system.
Okay.
So the unknown things will be the phase noise. And so what you'll have is you'll have one thing of phase noise for each Alice. And then you're going to have these key bits that are unknown. So it's really adding a little bit more things that the adversary doesn't know. Okay, and so,
but
so
Bob,
maybe we can...
Bob doesn't know the phase noise either.
Right. No, it's a good point. So let me
okay,
go through the attack and then we can see if it answers your question. Was there anything else?
Yeah, so I just wanted to say, so it's probably like in CDMA when I'm trying to listen to the channel without knowing the code, right?
Yeah.
Then I didn't see it.
Yeah.
Noise.
Yeah. Okay, so when we go through the attack, let's see if it takes care of some of those questions. Okay, so let me give you the overview of the results. First of all, first thing that we needed to do when we started analyzing the system that really hadn't been done before was figure out what the key, the plain text, and the ciphertext were. Okay, so now let's figure out what that is. So what we did was we assumed that the code words used by each Alice were known. Okay, so remember that I said that this was an orthogonal code, so you only had W of them. So we thought, might as well just assume that we know the assignment of the code words to the different Alices. So our plain text is just going to be for every sort of time that you inject a set of bits into the system, it's going to be the code words output by each one of these guys. The key is going to be the key to our scrambler, and the ciphertext is going to be what's sitting over here on the network, so what comes out of the scrambler. Okay? And this is an overview of our results. So when the system was first proposed, the obvious thing that everyone thought was sort of the security parameter for the system would be the number of frequencies in the system, so how many bits there are to the scrambler key. Okay? That's just... You know, we had 2 to the W code words, we would assume that the security parameter is 2 to the W. So we actually showed that that's not true, and security is not coming from the length, the number of bits you have in the scrambler, it's actually the number of Alices you have in parallel. And so this was,
I was actually going to ask, what is the number of Alices?
It's whatever you want it to be.
Well, I mean, what are the suggested values?
Okay. So when you build these systems, it's a lot easier to add another wavelength to your scrambler, another frequency to your scrambler, than it is to build a whole new Alice for yourself. So I've seen systems that have like 32 frequencies and 8 Alices. These are prototype systems. I mean, the technology I'm talking about here is very new. So they haven't built these enormous, huge brute force things, but they can build quite a few of them. it's a lot harder to build an extra Alice than it is to build another wave. So this is sort of a significant result, because one of the things they were talking about was, well, we should do 100 frequencies, and then we'll have 4 Alices, and then we'll be fine. But what that'll give you really is, it's not 2 to the 100, it's actually 2 to the 4, which is not very big. And so the other thing, that they didn't know any algorithm to learn the key other than brute force. And I don't want to say that the optics community believed that the only way you can learn the key is brute force, because that would be not true. But they didn't know of any way to learn the key. So I have an algorithm where you can learn the key with only 2 known plain tests. And the attack that we use is something that you can actually build in practice. I haven't built it, but there are papers showing that you can build these things. Okay. And so just one more comment. The significance here is that this is showing, there was sort of arguments in the optics community, is what's happening here is that the fact that you're superposing signals that's giving you sort of more security, or is it the fact that you have a lot of frequencies? And this sort of, this is the result that they find most interesting. So it means that maybe what you need to do is superpose signals. Yeah.
And when you say brute force operations, it's sort of just, what exactly does that mean? It's sort of just running the Bob circuit and with various different inputs? Is that what?
Maybe we should wait, and I'll show you. Yeah, I'll show you what I mean. I'll show you, it'll make sense when I show the attack. Okay, so here's the first step to attacking the system. We have to abstract it. So now what we're going to do is we're going to take the Alices, and we're going to express them as vectors. So the code word that each Alice sends is going to be a vector of ones and minus ones. Okay, so we have n of these vectors. Then there's this thing that's the phase noise, which has to do with the oscillations of the references of the different Alices. And then all these signals will be combined, and then they'll all have a scrambler key applied to them. So the scrambler key would be, again, a vector of ones and minus ones. Okay. And by the way, these code words are from the set of orthogonal code words that the system chooses to use. So first thing we did was define a plaintext matrix. So a plaintext matrix would be just taking all the code words of each Alice. So for a particular time where, you know, n bits come into the system, these are the n code words that are being transmitted. Okay, because we have n Alices, so n bits come into the system, we have n code words here. So that's our plain text matrix, and it's going to be a -1 + 1 matrix. And it's going to have dimension equal to the number of frequencies by the number of Alices, by the number of parallel transmitters. Okay, the next thing we have is our scrambler key vector, which is just going to be the vector of the bits that we use to set the scrambler. And again, it's going to have discrete elements. It's going to be either 1 or -1. And then we're going to have this new thing now, which is the phase noise vector. So that's going to be the vector of the references that each Alice uses. Okay? And this vector is unknown, so nobody knows what this is. There's no really way to measure this thing. Well, there might be, but right now, there's no way to measure this. And finally, we're going to have what Eve actually can measure. Okay, so this is, I'm not going to use a ciphertext in this analysis. What I'm going to use is a measurement. Okay, so this is something that Eve can actually do. She does this using beat detection. That's what the technology is called, beat detection. But what this is right now is you can think about this as a real valued measurement of the ciphertext here. And the reason that you have, so you're going to have 1 for each frequency. So what Eve is going to do, she's going to filter to every frequency. She's going to isolate each frequency in turn and take a measurement. Okay, so now I'll show you what this measurement sort of can be thought of as. But before I do that, sort of the key to all my analysis was the fact that there's an equation here. Okay, so all these things can be related. The measurement that Eve takes can be related to the plain text, the scrambler key, and the phase noise vector. And this is the equation. And this is under the assumption that the measurement that Eve takes is a good measurement. Okay, so let's talk about what the measurement means. But basically, the point of all this is that we were able to abstract this and make an equation out of it. And once we had an equation, we could start to attack. Yeah.
And Bob's circuit is also doing the same type of measurement?
No.
He's doing so.
Yeah, he's doing those dot products. This is not the dot product.
So how does, if you have it on later slides, but what is Bob's decoding operation in this language? He's taking a dot product with
one. It doesn't work in this equation because this is beat detection, and what we were doing there, we were doing optical CDMA decoding. So they're different optical operations that we were doing. So I don't know how to answer that question, really. But to answer something else, before we were talking about Eve building her own sets of bobs and just taking random code words and using those to figure out what was going on. Well, now we have 2W possible random code words that she could choose from. So that's why that attack is no longer particularly useful. I mean, she could try all 2W possible code words. We're going to assume she's computationally limited. W is very big. She can't actually take a dot product for every single possible code word that there is. So she's going to do something more clever here. She's going to use the speed detection. So before I say anything else, back to optics 101. So we have two sinusoids, and we're going to add them together. Okay? This is the sinusoid for Alice 1, and she's using this as her reference phase. And this is the sinusoid for Alice 2, and she's got a different reference phase. But you know, they get added together anyway, even though the reference phases are different. So we add them together, we get this new sinusoid. It's going to have twice the amplitude. And it's going to be different. So actually, this one's sort of starting at 0. This one's starting at minus 0.25. This one's sort of at minus something else. Okay, so the phase shift has moved around. Okay, and so what Eve is doing is she's taking an amplitude measurement. Okay, so why would an amplitude measurement be useful? Well, if you measure right here on this axis, you're going to get some amplitude here. If I'd measured this one on that axis, I would have gotten 0 amplitude. Okay, if I measured this one on the axis of 0, I would have gotten 1. I would have gotten an amplitude of 1. So basically, she's taking an amplitude measurement, and this amplitude measurement gives you information about the frequency, about the phase. And that's where that equation comes from that I showed you before. So I have to wave my hands around a little bit, but that's the idea. Okay. And so when I say it's sort of a noise-free measurement, I mean that Eve is actually able to measure what this amplitude is. Okay. So noise in her measurement would be she couldn't quite figure out where the crossing was. Okay. But we're going to assume that she can actually get that information. She can actually really measure what this should be. Okay. So here's the attack. So we have this equation, and it's a matrix equation. And let's look at every element of the equation. So we have our measurement, and the measurement is real valued. We have the key, and so what this matrix is going to be, it's going to be a diagonal matrix. So it's going to have all zeros, except for the diagonal. And the diagonal is just going to have the bits of the key. Okay. This is our plain text matrix, and it's going to be a 1-1 matrix. The whole matrix will be filled with 1s and minus 1s, which will be determined by the code word sent by each Alice. And this is going to be our phase noise vector, which is a vector of cosines of the phase noise. And the phase noise at the moment where Eve actually took her measurement. Okay. So the measurement is known because Eve measured it, known to Eve. So now we're Eve. We're attacking, so Eve knows what the measurement is. She doesn't know what the key is because it's a secret. She knows what the plaintext is. Why does she know? Because this is a known plaintext attack. So we're going to assume she knows some plaintext. And she doesn't know what the phase noise is. Okay, so this is what we have. And so now, this is the attack. What Eve is going to do, she's going to get an optical measurement and a plaintext. So she's going to know some plaintext, and for that plaintext, she'll get the corresponding measurement. Okay, that's all she's going to do with the system. She's going to get those two things from the system, then she's going to leave and go to her computer. And this is what she does. So she's going to guess n bits of the key. Okay, so before I say that, so let's look at the system here. What is this system actually, this system of equations? It's really a system of W equations. Okay, so in the system of W equations, we don't know what the bits of the key are, so that's W bits. And we also don't know what the phase noise is. And notice that the phase noise is real valued. So there's n real valued things we don't know, and W bits that we don't know. Okay, so what Eve can do, what we're talking about here is a brute force search. So basically what she's going to do is she's going to guess n bits of the key. Okay, so now she's left with W minus n bits of the key that she doesn't know. She's going to use these n key bits to calculate what the noise vector should be. If those were the real bits of the key, this would be what the real noise was. And then she'll use her equations to solve for W minus n remaining key elements. Okay, so this is a brute force search because she'll just keep doing this. She'll keep choosing n possible bits for her key. She'll solve these equations for x, and then she'll solve for the remaining bits of the key. Okay, and so this leads to this result because instead of having to do 2 to the power of frequencies operations here, all she has to do is guess n bits of the key. So in other words, guess one of two to the Alice's possible things, and then do this operation and keep doing it until she gets something that works. Okay, so that's why we call it a brute force search. So what this shows is that the security, if you know a single plaintext, by the way, this all we're assuming here is that she gets one single plaintext and one measurement, and she can do all of this brute force searching offline. This is going to reduce the search space from 2 to the power of frequencies to 2 to the number of Alice's. Did I lose everyone with this? Or questions? No? Okay. So that's the first result. And the reason that this works is because we have this equation. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, okay. So I'm going to finish this in 2 minutes. here's the last attack. So again, we have these things. This is an attack where you can learn the key. Okay, so what we're going to do now is we're going to learn the key. So remember that the key is fixed, and the reason the key is fixed is because we assumed that it was fixed for some period of time. Okay, so the key is fixed. What Eva's going to do, she's going to get 2 measurements, and she's going to get 2 corresponding plaintexts to go with those measurements. Okay, so all she's going to do, she's going to take a measurement and a plaintext, take another measurement and another plaintext. We have these equations here. Okay, there's two W possible equations. We have W plus 2N unknowns. Okay, so that means, and basically we're going to have fewer unknowns than equations. And the reason for that is because remember that each Alice needed 2 code words, right? And since you only have a linear number of code words in the length of your frequencies, this is going to be true. So I'm just going to go through this very quickly, but basically we have W plus 2N equations and W unknowns. So we have more equations than unknowns, so we can solve the system. So if we solve the system, are we done? We're not done. The reason we're not done is because we have to know how big the solution space of the system is. So in other words, even though this is a system of equations with a solution, how many solutions do we get? If we only get 2 to the number of Alice's solutions, we haven't learned anything. We want to know that we're getting a very small dimension solution space to this equation. So that's sort of the next part. So I looked at these equations for the particular system that Menendez's paper talked about, which was using Hadamard codes and having 2n equals w. So you're going to have n Alice's and you're going to have 2n wavelengths. Okay. So assume that you get 2 plaintexts and 2 noise-free measurements. What's the probability that the measurements and the plaintext she gets will give her a unique solution? Okay. So assume that there's 4 Alice's. If there's only 4 Alice's in the system, if you just chose 2 plaintexts to know at random, there's 75% chance that there's going to be only one solution to the system of W equations. So basically 75% probability that you learn the key. And as you increase the number of Alice's, which is kind of what's interesting, you'd think that as you increase the Alice's, you'd increase the security, because that's what my previous slide showed you. In fact, as you increase the Alice's, you're more likely to get plaintexts that will have a single solution to that system of equations that I showed you. So this was done in MATLAB not analytically, but there's also a theorem that we proved, which is a bit strange, but basically what it says is if the plaintext coming in has an odd number of zeros in it, if either one of them has an odd number of zeros in it, then what's going to happen is that you're going to get a unique solution to these equations. Okay, so I just put that up there because it's interesting, but we have proved that at least 75% of the plaintext that exists will give you a unique solution to your system of equations. So that's where our last result means. You can learn the key with high probability if you have 2 known plaintexts. Okay, so just to conclude. So I hope I've given you an idea of sort of what the area of optical encryption would be. What you need to consider are things like limited measurement capabilities and also the noise that is present in the system. And the hope is that somehow using these things, and the way that I showed you is clearly not the way to do it, but maybe we can do encryption faster than the data rates. So my attacks considered situations where Eve gets good measurements of what's going on in the system. And I showed that the security of the system depends on parallelism, not on decoding complexity. And the other thing we showed is that how to break the system if you have 2 known plaintexts. So in the future, I'd like to extend this to actually having her measure with noise and seeing if you could still solve that system of equations, even if your measurement was a little noisy. And some open problems. There's another scheme right now by Wu and Narimanov, who are actually at Princeton as well, that have suggested it's gotten a lot of press, and I'm not sure if it works or not, so it'd be interesting to analyze that. The other thing to do would be the bounded storage model, which is a theoretical model for long strings of digital bits, where the adversary can only store some of the bits, but can still see all of the bits. sort of parallels in this situation because we can't measure everything. It's not really a storage, it's a measurement issue. So if you could extend that model to the setting, maybe you can even get some positive results. Okay, and that's all. And I'd like to thank my co-authors and all the professors that have supported me.